Have you ever wondered why you keep meeting the same person in a different body? Same drama, same distance, same dizzying highs followed by the same hollow ache. You tell yourself it's bad luck, strange timing, poor options. But what if it isn't luck at all? What if it's a pattern you're unknowingly feeding? I've learned that love doesn't just show you who the other person is. It also shows you how you show up for yourself. And when you're hungry for love, starving for it, you'll mistake the first sweet thing for real nourishment. That's not a moral failing. That's a human one. But it is fixable. Tonight, we're going to strip away the stories and get honest, with empathy, not shame. We'll talk about self-trust, boundaries that don't sound like threats, chemistry that doesn't hijack your nervous system, and devotion that actually builds something strong. You'll hear principles you can use the next time your phone lights up with a text that makes your chest flutter. And beyond principles, you'll hear a way of standing in yourself that changes the kinds of people you draw near. Because love isn't a rescue mission, it's a meeting of two lives that are already in motion. And if that stings a little, good. That sting means something alive in you is ready to grow. Breathe. You don't need to beg for love. You need to become a place where love can live. 1. You shouldn't go grocery shopping when you're starving. You know how it goes. You walk into the store hungry, and everything looks perfect. You don't choose. You grab chips instead of real food. Sugar instead of protein. That's exactly what dating from emptiness feels like. When you're lonely enough, your brain will call almost anything connection. It's not because you're weak, it's because the nervous system hates the ache of isolation and will do whatever it can to stop the pain now. So you latch on to intensity. You convince yourself that butterflies are a compass and that the rush means it's right. But hunger isn't wisdom. Hunger is urgency dressed as clarity. I've learned that wanting a relationship is not the same as being ready for one. Wanting says, I can't stand this feeling another minute. Readiness says, I'm building a life I respect. Someone good can join me here. When you're starving, you don't ask, does this nourish me? You ask, does this fill me? And anything that fills you for a moment becomes fate. That's why the wrong people can feel so right in the beginning. They're quick calories for an empty heart. So what does eating before you shop look like in love? It looks like knowing the shape of your days, your sleep, your routines, your friendships, your creative work, and protecting them so that a partner is an addition, not a life raft. It looks like hearing your own voice in a quiet room and not running from it. It looks like learning the difference between solitude and neglect. One feeds you, the other starves you. And it looks like practicing small acts of self-respect that reduce desperation. Cooking for yourself, moving your body, keeping a promise you made this morning to tonight you. These aren't minor details. They are the scaffolding that prevents you from selling yourself for a quick fix. Here's the shift that changes everything. Stop looking for someone to end your discomfort. Start looking for someone who fits your already meaningful direction. When you're grounded, you ask different questions. Instead of "Do they want me?" you ask, "Do our lives align?" Instead of "How do I keep them?" you ask, "How do we both keep becoming?" You stop auditioning, you start discerning. You notice how you feel after the date, not just during the high. Do you feel more yourself or less? Expanded or contracted? Calm is a signal. So is confusion. Pay attention. Try this for 7 days. Every morning, write down one thing that nourishes your sense of self. A walk, a call to a friend, a focused work sprint, a decent meal. Then actually do it before opening the dating app or replying to late-night texts. You're training your system to taste stability. and a funny thing happens when you do. The chaos that used to thrill you starts to feel like junk food, and the steady presence you once called boring begins to taste like real life. You'll still want love, of course you will, but you won't be starving. And when you're not starving, you choose differently. You choose better. You choose from clarity, not from craving. 2. Build self-trust before expecting trust in love. You can't outsource trust. You can ask for reassurance, you can demand promises, you can scroll for signs, but none of that replaces the quiet contract you make with yourself. Self-trust is the ground under your feet. Without it, every conversation feels like a test, and every pause in a text thread feels like danger. I've learned that we don't just choose partners. We choose from the level of trust we have in our own perception. If you don't trust yourself, you'll either cling to anyone who says the right words or push away everyone who gets too close, because both closeness and distance feel unsafe when your inner anchor is loose. Let's make this practical. I like to think of self-trust as 4 C's that you can train like muscles. The first is curiosity. Not the detective kind that tries to catch people slipping, but the compassionate kind that notices your own patterns without turning them into crimes. Curiosity asks, "What is this feeling trying to tell me?" instead of, "What's wrong with me for feeling it?" When you get triggered, pause and narrate gently. "My chest is tight. My mind is racing to worst-case stories. And what I really want is closeness." That simple witness stance reduces the panic that makes you text something you don't mean or set a trap to make someone prove their care. Curiosity turns reaction into data. The second is capacity. This is your ability to stay anchored while big feelings roll through. It's emotional stamina, breathing through the surge, letting a wave be a wave. Capacity is built in tiny reps. You sit with discomfort for 90 seconds without acting. You go for a 10-minute walk before answering. You allow a difference of opinion without making it a referendum on your worth. Ironically, the moment you stop needing a feeling to vanish is the moment it loses the power to run your life. Partners who are healthy can sense capacity. It reads as steadiness, not coldness. It says, "I can hold myself, and that means I can hold space for us." Then comes compassion. If curiosity collects the data and capacity holds the storm, compassion is the warmth that keeps you human. It's treating your younger self like someone you love, not a project you're embarrassed by. You will repeat old moves sometimes. You will read a neutral message as rejection. You will overgive because you're afraid to lose. When that happens, compassion whispers, "Of course you did. You learned that move to protect yourself. We can learn a new one." Shame sharpens our insecurity. Compassion softens it, so growth can actually take. And here's a secret. People who are kind to themselves are far better at apologizing without collapsing and forgiving without erasing boundaries. Finally, commitment. Not the Instagram kind with cute captions, the daily, often invisible kind. Commitment is doing what you said you'd do for yourself, especially when no one is watching. If you promise you'll leave by 11, you leave by 11. If you say you won't argue over text, you wait. If you set a boundary, "I won't stay if talk turns cruel," you honor it. Every time you keep a small promise to yourself, your nervous system gets the message, "I'm safe with me." That safety is magnetic. It changes your taste. The adrenaline of chaos starts losing its appeal because you're no longer auditioning for belonging. You belong to yourself. Try this experiment for a week. Each morning, choose one mini rep for each C. Curiosity. Write 3 honest sentences about how you feel without explanation. Capacity. Pick one small delay before reacting. 60 seconds. 3 slow breaths. a short walk. Compassion. Put your hand on your chest once a day and tell yourself one non-performative kindness like, "You're allowed to be learning." Commitment. Select a tiny promise and keep it. A bedtime, a workout, turning your phone face down at dinner. Watch what shifts. You'll notice the volume knob on your anxiety turn down. You'll notice you hear what someone actually says instead of what your fear warns they mean. You'll notice you stop negotiating with red flags because you trust that you can handle the loneliness of walking away. Self-trust doesn't guarantee a perfect partner shows up tomorrow. It guarantees that when anyone shows up, you'll recognize whether they fit the life you're building. And if they don't, you won't turn yourself into a pretzel to make them stay. You'll tell the truth kindly, and you'll keep faith with yourself. That's the day you stop looking for proof you're lovable and start living like it. And maybe that's when love finally knows where to find you. 3. Healthy love requires growth, not just comfort. Be honest with yourself. How many times have you chased a relationship because you wanted relief, not truth? Relief from loneliness, from work stress, from the ache of uncertainty. You wanted a soft place to land, nothing wrong with that. But sometimes the soft place becomes a hiding place. Real partnership will hold you, yes, but the deeper gift is the mirror it places in front of you. A good partner doesn't just say, "You're perfect." They say, "I'm with you, and here's where you go missing." They don't shame you. They call you forward. If comfort is the couch, growth is the gym. You need both, but only one builds strength. We enter love hoping to be completed. That fantasy is seductive because it promises an end to effort. When I find the right one, this constant work on myself can finally stop. But love isn't an escape from becoming, it's an accelerator of it. The healthiest couples I've seen think of the relationship as a third thing you build together, not a cave you collapse into. There's you, there's them, and there's the living project between you. The trust, the rituals, the shared language, the goals, the way you repair after conflict. That third thing needs nutrients, honesty, feedback, curiosity, or it withers into routine dressed up as safety. Here's where a light stoic touch helps. The Stoics taught that you can't control another person's choices. You can only govern your responses, your character, your effort. In love, that means you stop trying to mold your partner into your comfort provider, and you start asking, "How do I show up with more presence, clarity, and courage?" Growth doesn't mean constant self-critique. It means you stay awake to what the relationship reveals. Your impatience, your tendency to stonewall, your habit of rescuing instead of listening, and you treat those moments as training opportunities, like lifting a heavier weight. Uncomfortable, yes, but the discomfort is information, not a catastrophe. Practically, growth looks less romantic and more structured than we think. It looks like a weekly check-in where you both ask, "Where did we feel most connected this week? Where did we miss each other? What can I do next week to make us easier to love?" No courtroom, no cross-examination, just two people debugging the system. Growth looks like learning the difference between preference and principle. Preference is, "I like messages during lunch." Principle is respectful communication even when stressed. You can compromise on preferences. You build foundations on principles. Growth looks like repairing quickly. "I got defensive. I'm sorry. The truth is, I felt small and I turned it into blame. Can we try again?" That single move, owning your part without drama, will transform the climate more than 100 passionate speeches. It also means inviting your partner's feedback without treating it as a verdict on your worth. You ask, When do you feel me pulling away? And you listen, even if the answer stings. You ask, what version of me brings out the best version of you? And then you practice becoming that, not because you're bending yourself out of shape to be loved, but because you want to be someone who loves well. You stop playing therapist, parent, or savior. You stop making the relationship responsible for the parts of your life you're avoiding, your health, your finances, your purpose. The more responsibility you reclaim, the lighter the bond becomes, and the more room there is for delight instead of pressure. If you're already in something long-term and it feels flat, don't jump to wrong person. First, add weight to the bar. Bring back shared effort. A small goal you pursue together. A skill you learn side by side. A routine you protect like a promise. Make novelty a discipline, not an accident. Once a week, 1 hour, you create a new shared memory on purpose. Then raise the quality of your attention. Put the phone down when they speak. Notice their micro joys and name them out loud. Nothing grows where attention is thin. And if you're dating, try this filter. Does this person grow near challenge or collapse into blame? Do they repair after rupture or rewrite the story to be the hero every time? Can they hold discomfort without punishing you for it? Chemistry will get you to the door. Character decides whether the house stands. Choose the person who is willing to build the third thing with you, patiently, imperfectly, consistently. Comfort is sweet, but growth is sacred. One soothes you for a night, the other strengthens you for a life. Choose the love that makes you kinder, clearer, and braver. Choose the gym, not just the couch. And maybe that's how two people become a place where both can truly become. 4. Emotional safety and nuance matter more than blame. You don't build love with perfect people. You build it with imperfect people who know how to make each other feel safe. Emotional safety is the quiet confidence that you can bring your full, complicated self into the room without being mocked, minimized, or turned into a case number on someone's mental docket. Safety doesn't mean you never fight. It means the fight has rails. No name-calling, no weaponized silence, no courtroom theatrics where the goal is to win instead of to understand. When safety is present, your nervous system loosens its fist. You breathe. You tell the truth faster. And problems that used to spiral for days resolve in minutes because nuance replaces blame. Blame is seductive because it's simple. It compresses the entire landscape of two histories, two nervous systems, two sets of triggers into one verdict. You did this. You don't care. Simplicity feels powerful in the moment. It gives you a villain to point at and a script to follow. But blame is emotional junk food. It spikes, it crashes, it leaves nothing repaired. Nuance is harder. Nuance asks you to slow down and separate signal from noise. What actually happened? What you made it mean? What old wound got poked? What your partner intended? What your body felt? What story your mind wrote on top? Nuance is work. But nuance is intimacy. Try this small move that changes the climate. Replace accusations with invitations. Instead of, you forgot the trash, you must not love me, you say, when the small agreements slip, I feel disconnected. I miss us. Can we reset? The facts didn't change. The emotional posture did. You're not prosecuting. You're revealing. You're letting your partner see the softer underbelly. I miss you, instead of the barbed wire. You're careless. That shift invites collaboration instead of defense. And defense is where conversations go to die. It helps to remember that your nervous system is fast and your wisdom is slow. The fast part writes headlines, ignored, dismissed, taken for granted. The slow part asks better questions. What else could this mean? What did I actually need, and how can I ask for it without a hidden dagger? Before you speak, buy yourself 90 seconds. Breathe into the ribcage. Feel your feet. Name what hurts without inflating what it means. Then lead with the bridge. I want us. I'm on your side. I'm trying to understand. This isn't weakness, it's leadership. You're training the relationship to be a place where repair outruns resentment. And yes, stoic clarity helps. You don't control your partner's tone, memory, or attention on a Tuesday night. You do control your principles. Speak respectfully. Don't catastrophize. Own your slice. Owning your slice is not the same as taking all the blame. It's the courage to say, I got sharp because I felt small. I'm sorry. What I was trying to say is I need more check-ins during busy weeks. Notice how that lands. The temperature drops. The other person's dignity stays intact, which increases the odds they'll own their slice too. I've been scattered. I can set reminders. Let's make Sunday planning a thing. Emotional safety doesn't mean the absence of boundaries. It's built on them. You can be gentle and still be firm. I won't continue a conversation where the voice gets cruel. I'm happy to revisit this after a break. I need you to speak to me, not at me. Boundaries set the rails. Compassion drives the train. Without rails, you get chaos. Without compassion, you get compliance without closeness. The sweet spot is both. We speak to be heard, and we listen to make hearing possible. If you're dating, look for nuance in how they handle small frictions. Do they escalate a misunderstanding into a character trial, or do they get curious? Can they ask for what they need without turning it into a moral indictment of you? Do you feel smarter, softer, more honest around them, or constantly braced? Your body knows. Calm is data. And if you're already in something that's frayed, try a week-long experiment. Zero sarcasm, zero global statements. Always, never. And a daily 10-minute reconnection without screens where each of you answers two questions. What felt good between us today? And is there anything small I can do tomorrow to make you feel more loved? You're building a habit of nuance on purpose. Blame shouts, nuance invites. One wins the argument, the other wins the life. Choose the room where your story is welcomed in paragraphs, not crushed into headlines. That's emotional safety. That's how love breathes. And maybe that's the beginning of conversations that leave you both more human than when you started. 5. Dating burnout is real, and you're allowed to step back. There's a kind of fatigue that doesn't come from work or workouts. It comes from hope, from the cycle of matching, chatting, planning, showing up with your best self, reading the room, feeling a flicker, then going home with the same quiet ache. Do that enough times, and your chest learns to brace before the appetizer arrives. That's not you being dramatic. That's your nervous system protecting you from disappointment on repeat. Name it clearly. You're not bad at love. You're tired. And tired people need restoration, not harsher schedules or more swipes at midnight. Here's the truth you might need permission to believe. You can pause. Not the I'm done forever theater, just a humane intermission to let your heart breathe. Pausing doesn't make you fall behind. It prevents you from choosing poorly just to end the search. Think of an athlete between seasons. They don't call it quitting. They call it recovery, skill work, recalibration. Your heart deserves the same professionalism. Take 4 weeks. Delete the apps if they feel like slot machines. Rebuild the rituals that make you feel like yourself. Sleep like it matters. Move your body without trying to look like a profile picture. Cook something that takes time. See friends who don't make your life a case study. You're refilling the well you draw connection from. If a full pause feels scary, your other option is to lower the stakes and shift the energy. Not every first date has to audition for forever. What if the bar for a successful first meeting was simply, did I enjoy this hour? Did I learn something about them and about myself? And did I show up as a real person instead of a performance? That's it. Let that be enough. Replace interrogation with play. Swap the "What are we looking for?" checklist with three human questions you actually care about. What's lighting you up lately? What kind of day makes you feel most like you? What skill are you quietly proud of? Lightness isn't avoidance. It's a bridge to authenticity. When the pressure drops, the truth rises. Protect your energy with small structural shifts. Limit yourself to one date a week, maximum. Decide ahead of time how long you'll stay. 90 minutes is generous. And stick to it without inventing emergencies. Keep the first meet simple. Coffee, a walk, a bookstore, a quiet bar. Choose environments that help you feel grounded so you can read your own signals. Notice your body. Are you breathing easier around this person? Do you feel more you? Chemistry can be shy. Don't demand fireworks at men at 10, but also don't negotiate with dread. If you feel heavy every time, that's data too. Maybe you need more restoration first. On the apps, shrink the funnel. Quality over quantity. Write a profile that sounds like a person, not a brochure. Lead with one vivid detail that a compatible human can play with. Your Sunday ritual, your favorite kind of silence, the small hill you'll die on, like returning the shopping cart. When you message, be specific and kind, and leave space for reciprocity. If they respond with energy that feels like homework or hunger, you're allowed to pass without writing a moral essay about it. Discernment is self-compassion in action. And for the love of your future self, stop turning mismatches into personal verdicts. A no is not a diagnosis. It's a redirect. The Stoics would call this amor fati, loving fate, not as a romantic slogan, but as a discipline. Accept the data of what is, so you can act cleanly on what's next. When a date fizzles, do a tiny debrief. One thing you appreciated, one thing you learned about your preferences, one thing you'll try differently. Then close the tab and go live your life somewhere that doesn't measure you by your pair bond status. If you're already on the edge of cynicism, remember, cynicism is just idealism with a bruised knee. Don't cure the bruise by amputating the leg. Let hope become quieter, steadier, less theatrical. You're not auditioning for belonging. You're cultivating a life that invites the right kind of person to recognize you. Step back if you need to. Step lighter if you'd rather. Either way, you're allowed to make love sustainable again. And maybe, when you stop rushing the horizon, you'll notice the sky has been beautiful all along. 6. The spark is real, but it can mislead you. Be honest, how many times have you confused adrenaline with alignment? That first jolt, the racing heart, the laugh that feels too loud, the sense that you've known them for years, can be intoxicating. It's real. It matters. But not everything that feels electric is safe to hold. Fire warms, fire burns. The spark can be a genuine sign of attraction, or it can be your nervous system waking up old patterns. The chase, the unpredictability, the hunger for someone just out of reach. If what you call chemistry is mostly anxiety in costume, constant overthinking, compulsive checking, bargaining with yourself to excuse their inconsistency, then the spark isn't guiding you, it's baiting you. I've learned to ask a simple question early. Is this excitement or is this agitation? Excitement expands you. You breathe easier. Your sense of humor returns. Your body feels grounded. even as you're drawn closer. Agitation compresses you. You feel like you're running a race you didn't sign up for, monitoring every micro-signal, auditioning for a role you already have. Excitement says, I want to sit a little nearer. Agitation says, if I don't perform perfectly, this will vanish. Notice the difference. Your body is speaking in a language older than your thoughts. Here's the trap. When someone is inconsistent, your brain releases more dopamine when they finally respond or offer affection. Intermittent reward wires attachment faster than steady presence. It's a casino effect. Unpredictability heightens desire. So you mistake the high for depth, the relief for love. You think, if I can just get them to choose me, it will prove I'm worth choosing. The spark becomes a project, and now you're not dating a person. You're chasing a feeling the person occasionally gives you. That's not romance, that's compulsion. A stoic lens helps here. Control what's yours to control, your standards, your pacing, your attention, and don't outsource your peace to the volatility of another. If a dynamic requires you to abandon sleep, self-respect, or sanity to keep it alive, it's not a soul connection. It's a signal to step back. Healthy chemistry has contour. It flirts, yes, but it also communicates. It creates curiosity without creating panic. It deepens through evidence. Calls that happen when they said they would. Plans that become real. Interest that shows up even when it isn't convenient. Try a small litmus test for the spark. After spending time with them, do the afterglow check. How do you feel in the hour after you part? Not the minute after, the hour after when your nervous system has room to tell the truth. Do you feel settled, quietly energized, a little more yourself? Or do you feel depleted, jumpy, scanning for the next sign? Another litmus test, traction. Is this connection moving? Dates lead to plans. Plans lead to rituals, or is it a glittering circle, all talk, no build? Real chemistry has traction. It pulls two real lives forward, not just the fantasy in your head. If you're prone to obsession, build guardrails before the spark hits. Decide your pace in advance, how often you'll see someone new, how late you'll text, how quickly you'll escalate physical intimacy. Attraction isn't a good reason to abandon the structure that protects you. Set a 48-hour rule for major decisions. No moving mountains while your brain is high. Tell two grounded friends the facts, not the fairy tale, and let them mirror reality back to you. Obsession hates sunlight. Discernment loves it. Also, redefine what boring means. A lot of people call steadiness boring because their baseline is chaos. If your nervous system learned that love equals uncertainty, then predictability will feel flat at first, like driving home on a newly paved road after years of potholes. Give steadiness a chance to register as safety, not lack. Ask different questions on early dates to detect the more subtle spark. When did you last apologize and mean it? What does a good week look like for you? How do you take care of your future self? Listen for warmth, consistency, and a life with edges. That's chemistry you can build on. And if you notice that the spark keeps dragging you to the same cliff, fast rise, harder crash, practice a tiny, radical move. When the anxiety spikes, slow down rather than speed up. Delay the reply by an hour. Keep your plans with friends. Go on the walk. Let desire breathe. If it's real, it won't evaporate when you stop chasing it. If it evaporates, it was powered by your pursuit, not by mutual intention. The spark matters. Attraction matters. But attraction that costs you your center isn't a compass, it's a flare. Beautiful for a moment, blinding if you stare too long. Choose the kind of spark that lights a steady fire, one that you can sit beside night after night without burning yourself to prove you feel. And maybe that's how you stop mistaking smoke for stars. 7. Chemistry is not the same as compatibility. You can feel electricity with someone who will never stand in the rain with you when life storms. That's the painful truth most of us learn the hard way. Chemistry is the pull, the spark across the room, the ease of banter, the laughter that arrives without effort. Compatibility is the architecture, the shared values, daily habits, and moral direction that decide whether a life can actually be built. Chemistry gets you to the front door. Compatibility determines whether the house stands when winter comes. Ask yourself, do you want a scene or a season? A scene is intoxicating. Music, light, the sense that you're finally seen. A season is different. It has mornings. It has grocery lists, deadlines, tired days, family illness, car trouble, and still, two people who choose each other with gentleness. Chemistry can't carry all of that. It can help. It can brighten. But it cannot replace the quiet logistics of love. How you manage conflict. How you handle money. How you talk about faith and family. How you apologize. How you maintain friendships. What respect means in your mouth. If those words point in opposite directions, the kiss won't save you. Here's where clarity changes everything. Compatibility is about fit, not sameness. You don't need your twin. You need alignment on the few pillars that hold the roof. Honesty, commitment, life pace, the vision you're both walking toward. Picture two rivers merging. If they flow at similar speeds toward a shared valley, they join and deepen. If one is rushing to the sea and the other loops back to a lake, they'll fight each other's current no matter how dazzling the sunlight looks on the surface. That fight becomes your everyday, micro-resentments, roles you never agreed to, compromises that corrode you, the very traits that thrilled you at first. They're so spontaneous. They're so driven. Become the thorns you bleed on because there was no shared frame to hold them. A stoic angle helps here. Love what is real, not what you wish it to be. Compatibility asks you to look at evidence. Do they show up when they say they will? Do they adjust when reality changes? Or do they rewrite reality to protect their comfort? Do your values rhyme in the ways that count? Truth-telling, fidelity, kindness under pressure, generosity with time and attention. When you picture a decade from now, are you building the same kind of home culture? How holidays feel, how fights end, how children, or no children, fit into your time and purpose. These aren't boring checkboxes, they are the blueprint. Without a blueprint, chemistry builds a gorgeous doorway to a room that doesn't exist. Make it practical. On early dates, listen beyond the charm. Listen for calendar and character. Calendar, how they allocate time reveals priorities. Do they leave oxygen for relationship? Or is there always one more thing that delays connection? Character, watch how they treat the waitstaff, talk about exes, and handle tiny disappointments. Most of long-term love is built in tiny moments. That's where someone's values leak. Ask questions that expose future friction early. How do you like to handle money as a team? What does commitment look like when you're overwhelmed? How do you feel about therapy or coaching when we get stuck? The right person isn't offended by these. They're relieved. Also, check your own bias. If you're addicted to intensity, compatibility will feel like less at first. Stability registers as silence to a nervous system trained on chaos. Give it time. Steadiness has a music of its own, subtle but enduring. It sounds like a car pulling into the driveway when they said they would. It sounds like, I'm still frustrated, but I won't raise my voice. It sounds like, I booked the dentist appointment you keep putting off. That is love doing the dishes. Not glamorous, deeply sacred. When you sense misalignment, don't spiritualize friction into destiny. If your non-negotiables keep getting negotiated, you are not working on the relationship. You are working against yourself. Compatibility means you can differ without disrespect and dream without dragging each other. If your goals require the other person to become someone they've never wanted to be, love them enough to let them go and love yourself enough to leave. Choosing fit is not a failure of romance. It's the foundation of it. Try a simple exercise. Write three pillars your future must rest on. Non-negotiable values, not superficial traits. Then, on dates or in your current relationship, look for evidence, not promises. Does their life already echo those pillars? If yes, chemistry becomes a torch you both carry. If no, chemistry becomes a wildfire you're constantly trying to contain. Chemistry is the song. Compatibility is the choreography two bodies can actually sustain. When both are present, love doesn't just feel good, it moves well. And maybe that's what you've been searching for all along. 8. Stop trying to control someone into loving you. There's a quiet panic that creeps in when you sense the person you want isn't fully choosing you. It shows up in small negotiations with your own dignity. You reply faster than you want to. You tolerate jokes that sting. You make yourself more convenient, more impressive, more anything, just to tilt the scales. You start managing their attention like a stock you can't afford to see drop. That's not love. That's brinkmanship with your self-respect. You can't architect devotion through strategy. You can only reveal a life someone is free to meet, and free not to. I've learned the hard way that the moment you feel compelled to persuade someone to value you, you've already stepped out of alignment. Control is a symptom of fear. Fear that if you stop carrying the connection, it will collapse. Fear that if you stop editing yourself, you'll be too much. Fear that if you say what you actually need, they'll leave. But here's the hard grace. If your needs amputate the relationship was standing on your silence, not on mutual choice. And silence isn't stability, it's a slow leak. Use a stoic lens. Focus on what's yours to govern. Your boundaries, your honesty, your pace, your presence. You don't control whether they delete the apps, whether they text with intention, whether they see commitment as a joy or a jail. You control whether you keep participating in a dynamic that makes you smaller. If someone's attention is always half turned to the door, no amount of performing will turn the knob back toward you. Attention follows value. Value follows vision. If their vision doesn't include building something steady with you, accept the data. Acceptance isn't apathy, it's the clean starting point for real choice. Let's get practical. If you're with a maybe, act like it's a maybe. Don't gift them the privileges of a yes. Stop rearranging your week for last-minute availability. Stop softening your truth to avoid ruining the vibe. State your standard calmly. I'm looking for consistent effort and clarity. If that's not where you are, I'll step back. Not a threat, a boundary. Then honor it. You'll feel the withdrawal symptoms of your old pattern. Refreshing feeds, bargaining with yourself, fantasizing change. But that discomfort is detox, not a sign you should return. Give it 7 days. Watch how much energy comes back when you're not project managing someone else's interest. In conversation, trade influence for information. Instead of convincing, "We're so good together, can't you see?" ask clarifying questions, and listen to the answers without decorating them. What does commitment look like for you this year? How do you make decisions about exclusivity? When you imagine your life 12 months from now, where does relationship fit? People tell you who they are. Believe the boring sentences. If their words and actions don't rhyme, believe the actions. That isn't cynicism. It's emotional literacy. Notice your control tells. Maybe you overshare to force intimacy. Maybe you undershare to force pursuit. Maybe you become perfect, always agreeable, never needy, to force security. Perfection is a performance, and performances are exhausting to attend. Real connection breathes in the presence of truth. I like you. I need clarity. That joke landed harsh. I want partnership, not a situationship. Speak plainly. The right person doesn't punish clarity. They meet it with their own. Here's a counterintuitive freedom. You don't have to keep someone who doesn't want to be kept. Let love be a door, not a cage. If they want to look around, open it. If they want to stay, they'll stay because the room is honest and warm, not because the lock is tricky. And if they leave, your life remains intact because it was never built around policing another adult's options. You become easy to lose and hard to forget. Easy to lose because you won't grip. Hard to forget because your presence felt like weather. Steady, clean, undeniable. Create a small ritual to retrain your nervous system. When you feel the urge to control, overtext, overexplain, overfunction, pause for 90 seconds. Put your phone down. Breathe into your ribs. Ask, what action here would I be proud of in a week? Then do the small, dignified thing. Send one clear message, or none. Keep your plan with a friend. Go lift something heavier than your fear. Write the truth in your journal, and let the silence do some of the talking. Love doesn't grow under surveillance. It grows under sunlight. If you need a single sentence to carry into your next choice, try this. I would rather be chosen than convinced. Let that guide your steps. It will cost you a few almosts. It will return you to yourself. And maybe that's the only place love was trying to lead you anyway. 9. Dating is about discernment. Marriage is about devotion. Hold these two truths like twin compasses and you'll stop getting lost. While you're dating, your job is not to rescue almosts, rehabilitate red flags, or audition for a role in someone else's movie. Your job is discernment, clear eyes, quiet ego, steady standards. You're gathering data. Do our values rhyme? Can we repair without theatrics? Does their calendar reflect room for partnership or just room for me when it's convenient? Discernment is not cold, it's kind. It protects both people from the slow cruelty of pretending. It lets you say, this doesn't align, without turning anyone into a villain. Devotion is a different art. It begins when you've chosen a person and a person has chosen you. When the energy shifts from proving to tending, from testing to building. Devotion asks, how do we keep choosing, especially on the days we don't feel like it? In the discernment phase, think like a scientist and a poet. The scientist watches patterns, words versus actions, consistency under stress, the way they talk about those who can't offer them status points, exes, service workers, their own family. The poet listens for resonance, the quiet ease in your chest after a conversation, the laughter that makes time soft, the shared silence that doesn't demand a performance. You're not hunting for perfection, you're checking for fit. Write 3 non-negotiable pillars, truth, commitment, kindness, or whatever your future must rest on, and look for evidence, not promises. When misalignment shows, don't romanticize friction as chemistry. A clean no is a gift. Stoic wisdom applies. Love reality more than your fantasy of it. If you're already in a long-term bond, shift from discerning if to devoting to how. Devotion is not martyrdom. It's not swallowing needs until resentment becomes your love language. Devotion is mutual, active, creative. It looks like building the third thing together. Rituals, shared goals, a culture of how we fight, how we play, how we rest. It sounds like, I'm frustrated and I'm with you. Let's pause and try again. What can I do this week to make us easier to love? Devotion turns rupture into a rehearsal for deeper trust. It replaces scorekeeping with system tuning. Make it practical with two frameworks, one for dating, one for devotion. For dating, use the DATE filter each month. Direction: are we walking towards similar futures? Accountability: do we own our missteps without drama? Time: is there predictable effort, not just spurts of charm? And energy: do I feel larger, calmer, more myself after time together? If two or more are consistently missing, step back with dignity. I'm looking for X, and I'm not feeling that here, so I'm going to bow out. No essays, no negotiations. Discernment is the courage to leave before you need to heal from staying. For devotion, use the PAIR practice weekly. Presence, 15 minutes of undistracted attention daily if possible. Appreciation, name one specific thing they did that made your life lighter. Integrity, keep one promise you made to the relationship. Budget talk, therapy session, planned date. Repair, own your slice quickly. I got defensive. The truth is, I felt small. I'm sorry. Can we restart? This is not glamorous work. It is sacred work. It's how affection matures into trust, and trust matures into ease. Here's where many couples stumble. They stay in discernment after commitment, treating every conflict like a referendum on, are you the one? Or they try to perform devotion while still ignoring glaring misfits. The first creates chronic threat. The second creates chronic self-betrayal. Choose one lane at a time. While you're dating, be willing to walk away. In devotion, be willing to walk toward the hard conversation, the shared budget, the calendar that protects us time, the apology that costs pride but returns intimacy. If you're in a long relationship that feels distant, start with self-leadership. Clean up your side of the street. Sleep more, scroll less, stabilize your routines, be on time. Then open the door gently. I've missed us. Here's what I notice in me and what I'm changing. Can we design one small ritual this week to reconnect? No blame, no courtroom, just an invitation. If you're dating and feel the itch to grasp, pause. Ask, am I discerning or am I auditioning? Choose the posture that respects your future. Carry this line with you. Discernment chooses the right person. Devotion keeps choosing them. Let it decide your next move. And maybe that's how love becomes not a storm to survive, but a home you both get to build. 10. You can tell a lot about how much you love yourself by the partner you've chosen. Look closely at the patterns, not the exceptions. Your partner is not your worth, but the way you allow yourself to be treated is a mirror reflecting your current standard for love. This is not about blaming them or shaming you. It's about realizing that your choices whisper your beliefs out loud. If you consistently pick people who offer crumbs, some part of you believes crumbs are safer than the feast. If you keep returning to those who are unavailable, some part of you is terrified of being fully seen. We say, I just have bad luck. But luck doesn't repeat itself with such eerie precision. Patterns do. Self-love is not a mood, it's a metric. It shows up in the micro moves. Whether you address the joke that cut deep or swallow it and perform calm, whether you ask for clarity or build castles in the fog, whether you keep bending until you call it compromise, loving yourself looks like stepping toward what nourishes you and stepping away from what exhausts you without turning anyone into a villain. It's not grand, it's ordinary. It's choosing bedtime over a 1 a.m. text thread that goes nowhere. It's telling the truth early. I'm looking for consistency. And believing your own words enough to leave when consistency doesn't arrive. The hard part is that many of us learned love in environments where attention had a price. You performed, you pleased, you became useful, and approval arrived like weather, unpredictable, intoxicating. So in adulthood, your nervous system scans for the familiar rhythm of almost enough. A steady person feels flat, a caring message feels clingy, and a calm evening feels empty. This isn't because you're broken, it's because chaos was home. If you've been trained on tension, relaxation registers as danger at first. That's why we must retrain, not by forcing ourselves to want what we don't, but by staying present long enough to discover that safety has a flavor beyond boredom. Give steadiness time to taste like freedom. A stoic angle helps. Reality is the teacher. Take notes. Write down in plain language how you feel after spending time together. Expansive or contracted, respected or managed, peaceful or on trial. Don't negotiate the data with a fantasy of potential. People can grow, yes, but a relationship built on what could be makes you a full-time sculptor and leaves you with dust in your lungs. Choose what is, or choose to leave what is. Both are acts of self-respect. Make this practical with a two-part audit. Part 1. Your side. For 7 days, track your micro-choices. Where did you say yes when you meant no? Where did you speak up cleanly? Where did you self-abandon under the banner of flexible? Reward every instance of alignment, small celebrations, real rest, movement, a meal that tells your body you're on your own side. Part 2. The relationship. List 5 behaviors you experience regularly. Frequency matters more than intensity. They apologize without changing. They keep plans. They go silent under stress. They check in when I'm overwhelmed. They minimize my concerns. They turn toward repair. Patterns over promises. Then ask the sentence that clarifies everything. If someone I love were living what I am living, what counsel would I give them? Follow it. If you're already deep in something that feels thin, you don't have to detonate it to love yourself better. Start by raising your floor, your minimum standard. Speak up with warmth and specificity. When jokes land on my insecurities, I shut down. I want to feel safe with you. Can we keep humor kind? Then watch. Not for one day, not for one apology, for a month of patterns. If the climate shifts, water the new growth. If it doesn't, honor your boundary with action. Leaving is not proof of failure. Sometimes it is the first honest act of love you've performed for both of you. If you're dating, let your future self co-pilot. Picture them, clear-eyed, rested, unafraid to be alone. Ask what they would tolerate, what would make them proud, what quiets their breath. Then date as their representative. You'll swipe slower, you'll ask better questions, you'll stop turning mixed signals into riddles you're destined to solve. You won't demand perfection, you'll require sincerity, effort, and a shared direction. And your taste will change. The familiar ache of almost will lose its glamour. The rare ease of reciprocity will glow. Here's the line to carry. The partner you accept reveals the permission you give life to treat you. Raise the permission. Raise the room you walk into. not with arrogance, with calm standards and a soft heart. Choose people who choose you in daylight, not just by candlelight. Choose the tone that keeps your nervous system open. Choose the kind of attention that doesn't make you earn your own oxygen. And maybe, in choosing this, you finally teach your heart the shape of home. 11. Boundaries are love. If love is a house, boundaries are the walls that keep the wind from turning dinner into a storm. They don't imprison, they define. They tell you where I ends and you begins, so that we can exist without swallowing either person whole. Many of us resist boundaries because we fear they'll make us hard or unloving. The truth is the opposite. The absence of boundaries breeds resentment, and resentment curdles affection. The presence of boundaries protects tenderness so it can keep breathing day after day. Start with this reframe. A boundary is not a verdict on someone's worth. It's a statement of your stewardship. You are responsible for your energy, your time, your body, your attention. These things are finite. When you pretend they aren't, you pay later with irritation, passive aggression, emotional shutdown, or explosions that seem to come out of nowhere. They don't. They come out of all the places you said yes when your lungs were begging for no. When you finally draw a line, it can feel shocking to the other person, not because you're cruel, but because you trained them to expect endless access. That's not their villainy. It's a pattern. But patterns can be rewritten. A Stoic lens helps here. Control what's yours to control. You don't control whether someone likes your limits, whether they think they're too much, whether they call you selfish for not being endlessly available. You control the clarity with which you speak, the calm with which you hold the line, and the consistency with which you act. Boundaries are less about speeches and more about choreography. If late-night calls leave you raw for work, you don't debate your right to sleep. You stop answering after 10 p.m. If sarcasm slices you open, you don't write a dissertation on humor. You state, "I won't stay in conversations where I'm belittled," and you step away when the tone turns sharp. Not to punish, to protect. Here's a test that simplifies the complexity. After enforcing a boundary, do you feel smaller or more honest? If smaller, you weaponized the line to score a point. If more honest, you used it to stay human. Boundaries delivered with contempt are just elegant forms of control. Boundaries delivered with warmth, eye contact, steady tone, simple words, turn into invitations. Here's how we keep both of us safe enough to stay open. You are saying, "This is the price of admission to my presence, and I pay it too." That mutuality matters. If you demand promptness but arrive whenever, if you ask for tender language but lace yours with spikes, your boundary becomes a performance. Integrity is the oxygen. Make it practical with three moves. First, name your non-negotiables in plain English. No jargon, no courtroom. "I won't discuss sensitive topics when anyone is yelling. I don't share passwords. I won't cancel therapy to make room for last-minute plans. Put them somewhere you can see for a month." Second, practice the two-sentence boundary. Sentence one names the need. Sentence two states the consequence. "I need respectful tone. If it turns cruel, I'll pause the conversation and revisit later." Then do exactly that. Third, add a repair path so the line doesn't feel like a cliff. If it gets heated, let's take 10 minutes and return at the table with water. Boundaries without bridges feel like exile. Bridges turn the line into a path back home. Expect pushback, especially from those who benefited from the older script. Some will call you rigid. Some will test the fence. That's data, not destiny. Healthy people adjust. They might stumble, but they self-correct, because they want access to a relationship where both hearts can breathe. Unhealthy dynamics escalate, bargain, minimize, or make your limit about their wounds. You are not required to become boundaryless to prove your kind. You prove your kind by staying clear without cruelty. If you've never seen boundaries modeled, begin small. Choose one micro boundary this week. A bedtime you honor. A no work talk after 8. A phones face down at dinner. A no jokes about insecurities. Tell the person it affects once, succinctly, and then let your actions teach. When you keep the gate, watch how much less you rehearse arguments in your head. Watch how quickly your affection returns, because you're no longer bargaining with yourself to stay. And if you're afraid boundaries will scare love away, remember, only the kind of love that needs you depleted will leave when you stop depleting. The kind that's worth keeping will lean in, learn your contours, and show you theirs. That's intimacy. Not two people merged into a blur, but two distinct souls meeting at the border again and again with respect. Carry this line. Boundaries are not a barrier to love. They are the structure that lets love last. Draw them with a steady hand. Hold them with a soft heart. And maybe that's how your relationship becomes a place where both of you can keep choosing to stay. 12. A boundary is I will or won't, if and ice. Clarity is kindness, and nothing clarifies faster than a boundary stated as a personal rule, not a threat, not a lecture, a rule you live by. I won't stay if the voice turns cruel. I will leave the room if you insult me. I won't continue dating if exclusivity isn't on the table by month 3. Notice the grammar. It's about your behavior, not their punishment. When you define a boundary this way, you remove the courtroom from the conversation. You're not trying to control an adult. You're choosing how you will participate in a dynamic. That shift from managing them to governing you restores your dignity and, paradoxically, increases respect on both sides. The reason many boundaries fail is that they're delivered like ultimatums. Do this or else. Ultimatums spark power struggles. Boundaries, when clean, dissolve the struggle because you're not debating their choices. You're announcing your own. The Stoics would approve. You're placing your effort where your agency actually lives. You can't force someone to speak gently, prioritize you, tell the truth, or commit. You can decide what you will do when gentleness, priority, truth, or commitment are absent. That decision becomes your compass when emotions surge and the old instinct to negotiate your standards wakes up. Let's get very practical. Before you voice a boundary, test it in private. Ask, am I genuinely willing to honor this, even if honoring it means leaving? If the answer is no, it's not a boundary yet. It's a wish. Wishes are fine. Name them as such. I'd like more check-ins during busy weeks. But don't dress a wish in boundary clothing. It erodes your credibility and confuses the bond. When you are ready, state the boundary in 2 sentences, the need and the action. I need respectful tone. If it turns demeaning, I'll pause the conversation and revisit later. Then follow through once, not with drama, not with door slams, with steady feet and a calm face. One clean action teaches more than 5 speeches. Expect turbulence at first, especially if the relationship has been running on your self-abandonment. People acclimate to the oxygen you supply. When you stop oversupplying, they might gasp. Some will recalibrate, because they value you and the relationship. Some will rage, bargain, or twist the story so they can avoid examining their own habits. That reaction is information, not a verdict on your worth. Healthy love adapts to mutual limits. Transactional attachment demands your relapse. Choose the room that honors your lungs. Boundaries are not only for harm, they're also for health. Use them to protect what makes you a good partner: sleep, focus, friendships, alone time. I don't answer work messages after 9. I keep Sunday mornings for myself. I won't cancel therapy to make space for last-minute plans. These lines don't reduce intimacy. They deepen it because they keep you resourced. A depleted, you can't listen, can't repair, can't play. A resourced, you can love without keeping score. Here's a small ritual to anchor the change. Write 3 boundary statements on a card you can carry. 1 for communication, 1 for time, 1 for respect. Read them every morning for 2 weeks. When a moment tests you, don't negotiate. Consult the card. Let it speak when your nervous system wants to bargain. After you act, do a brief debrief. Did my action make me smaller or more honest? If smaller, refine the boundary. Strip out sarcasm. Drop the threat. Keep the rule. If more honest, celebrate quietly. That's self-trust growing in real time. If you're afraid a boundary will make you too much, remember, only people who benefit from your lack of boundaries call your clarity a problem. The right person doesn't fear your lines. They relax inside them because lines make the field playable. It becomes safer to be silly, to disagree, to tell the truth, because both of you know how the game is kept fair. This is what devotion needs. 2 people who can say, "Here is how I will care for myself while I love you," and then keep saying it without apology. Carry this with you. A boundary is a promise to your future self, kept in the present. Speak it simply, enforce it softly, and maybe that's how you stop begging to be chosen and start living like someone who chooses themselves. So love can finally meet you there. So here's the real through line beneath every point you've just heard. You don't attract the wrong people because love has conspired against you. You attract them when hunger is steering the car. When you date from emptiness, the spark becomes a siren. Chemistry gets crowned king. Control dresses up as care. Boundaries feel like barriers, and almost gets rebranded as destiny. But when you date from clarity, when you know who you are, what you value, and how you care for yourself, everything slows, sharpens, settles. The wrong doors stop looking like invitations. The right ones don't need to shout. You've seen the map. Eat before you shop. Build a life you respect so you're not bargaining for scraps. Train the 4 C's until they live in your bones. Curiosity: what is this feeling asking of me? Capacity: sit with waves without drowning. Compassion: drop the self-contempt and speak to yourself like someone you love. Commitment: keep promises you make to yourself when no one is watching. Choose growth over just comfort. Build the 3rd thing together. Repair quickly. Honor principles over preferences. Create emotional safety with nuance, not blame. Talk like you want to keep the bridge. If you're burned out, pause without guilt or lower the stakes on purpose. Let connection be human again. Respect the spark. Test it for traction. Refuse to mistake adrenaline for alignment. Separate chemistry from compatibility. Build on shared values, not wishful edits. Release control. You don't have to convince a maybe into a yes. While dating, practice discernment. Inside commitment, practice devotion. Audit your choices as a mirror of your self-love. Raise your floor. And let boundaries be what they truly are: the structure that lets tenderness survive. Now, make it real. Give yourself a simple 7-day reset. 1 tiny act each day that bends your life towards steadiness. Day 1, nourishment. Do 1 thing that feeds your center before you open a dating app or reply to that late-night text. Walk, write, cook, lift, call a real friend. Teach your nervous system the taste of enough. Day 2. Boundary. Write a two-sentence boundary you will actually honor. I need respectful tone. If it turns cruel, I'll pause and return later. Use it once, calmly. Day 3. Discernment. List 3 non-negotiable pillars. Truth, commitment, kindness, or your own. Look for evidence in your current situation. No decorating, no apologizing for data. Day 4. Capacity. Choose one delay before reacting. 3 breaths, a short walk, a 90-second timer. Let feelings crest without driving the car. Day 5. Compassion. Put your hand on your chest and say one honest kindness. You're learning. Then act like someone you're learning to trust. Day 6. Spark test. After a date or a call, do the 1 hour afterglow check. Expanded or contracted. Settled or scrambled. Adjust your pace accordingly. Day 7. Devotion practice. If you're in a relationship, schedule a 15-minute presence block with 0 screens and 2 questions. What felt good between us this week? And one small thing I can do to make us easier to love. If you're single, do the same with yourself. What felt good in your life, and what one small promise will you keep next week? You don't need perfection to change your path. You need one honest step, repeated. You need to stop performing to be chosen and start living like someone worth choosing, because you are. When you do, the frantic chase quiets. The almosts fall away. Steadiness starts to glow where drama used to glitter. And the love you've been working so hard to manufacture begins to look more like what it was always meant to be. Two whole people, side by side, building the third thing between them with patience, humor, and a kind of ordinary holiness. Carry one line with you into your next decision. I would rather be chosen than convinced. Let it shape your texts, your pace, your standards, your goodbyes. Let it shape how you speak to yourself when it's late, and your old patterns come knocking. Close the door gently. Turn toward the life that's already inviting you. And maybe that's all love has been asking of you. Become a place where it can live.